Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle.
I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on 3rd and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Never before, well, okay, I won't say never before, but rarely before have I been so glad to be wrong. I was wrong.
Me too, I was really wrong.
Really, really wrong. Very, very wrong. That's okay, we like to admit when we are, because we know that this is an imperfect science, this alleged science of predicting professional football in the year 2010. Fact is, I don't know. I'm not sure anybody saw this coming. I mean, I know that there are probably a few of you. And by the way, welcome inside Patriots Playbook for a Tuesday, a nitpick Tuesday here on Patriots.com radio. I'm John Rook. And I have to tell you, unless you're lying, my guess would be very few of you saw this coming. Certainly, you might have seen a Patriots win. I will allow for that. However, you didn't see a Patriots win coming in the form and fashion in which it was delivered. Part of it was impressive strictly from the aspect of where did the defense come from? Where did these guys come from? Where have they been all year? Could it have been scheming? Could it have been, hey, we're ready to unleash them? Could it have been, well, this is the way we think we can beat Pittsburgh. We got to be more aggressive rather than passive as they've been in the past. I don't know, but I was really happy to see it. And I'm sure many of you were also happy to see it because I wasn't, frankly, I was getting to the point where I wasn't sure it was even capable. I wasn't sure it was even possible with this football team to go into attack mode on defense. And yet they did that in the 39-26 win on Sunday night. Forget the yardage allowed. Forget the passing yards that Ben Roethlisberger threw for. A lot of it was when they were, you know, two scores plus behind in quote-unquote garbage time. I know you hear that saying a lot. I thought the Patriots' defense was magnificent. If they can continue to play like that and put out that kind of effort, there is no reason whatsoever that they can't, I don't want to say go undefeated the rest of the way, because I think we all know there's still a lot of football to be played. We played 9 games. We've got 7 more to go. But I think that there's every real possibility that this team can win 12, 13 games. And if they win 12 or 13 games, my guess would be that they will be right there in terms of the AFC East Championship. And as long as one of those wins is against the Jets on December the 6th, then I don't think we have too many problems then, do we? So now you get a bit of an idea why I tried last week desperately to stay away from predicting games, because it just doesn't – I mean, it's foolhardy. It's crazy. But based on what we know to that point in time and what we think could possibly happen, you give it a shot. We all gave it a shot. I know there are some diehard Patriots fans that would love to say I told you so today, and by all means, fire away. It is Nitpick Tuesday, so, you know, I'm fair game as far as nitpicks are concerned. You want to do that? That's great. So this Patriots team now is 7-2, and I think I'm 5-4 in those 9 games, picking the Patriots' wins or losses. So the Patriots are 2 games ahead of where I am picking them, and that's fine. Probably better off that way. It means that it's unexpected. It means it's all a bonus to this stage of the game, right? So I guess that's what we have to go on. We'll find some things to kind of get into today, and I'm sure that you have, you know, your trouble areas, as I just kind of went through with the PFW boys here just a couple of moments ago. We have some things that certainly are still worth exploring, because by no stretch of the imagination is this a finished project. This is not a finished team. We're still 7 weeks away from even thinking about the playoffs. So in that regard, that still means to me that's 7 opportunities to screw up. You could lose them all and go 7-9. I mean, it's unlikely, but you could. And seeing what we've seen throughout this season. I just think that you really can't afford to look too far ahead. You really do have to concentrate on each and every week. And it's probably a good thing that the guys in the locker room do just that. We look ahead. They really can't afford to. So I'd like your thoughts on Sunday night. Webradio@patriots.com is our email address. The Ace Ticket Hotline is open and available at 508-543-7482. 508-543-7482. Facebook page is up. If you've got some stuff to share, either post it on the webpage or you can chat it, and I'll respond either here on the air or via chat, one way or the other.
And before everybody piles on me, I'm waving the white flag with both hands.
Why would they pile on you, Kevin?
Well, I said multiple times last week that they'd lose by 2 touchdowns on Sunday.
You did say that.
I did say that.
That's fine. I said 16-13. I didn't think that we were going to have a combined 65 friggin' points scored.
No, they can come at me more than you.
Well, you know, 6 of 1, half dozen another. I mean, a win is a win, a loss is a loss. It doesn't really matter how you get there. What really matters is the end result. I think we all know that. Here are a couple of thoughts on the game. Number one, pleasantly surprised, obviously, as I said, about the way that the defense played. I do really love having chance to have, you know, 24 to 48 hours to sort of reflect back on it, because I really am able to kind of get away from the emotion of the moment. But I remember watching the game with my son Sunday night, and we were both floored, stunned. I mean, our jaws were on the ground most of the game. It's kind of like, oh, my God, did you see that? Oh, my God, did you see that? Gronk caught a ball. Oh, my God, did you see that? So I'm not busting on Rob Gronkowski, but I'm just saying, you know, we have a tendency to really sort of hold on to a show-me type of attitude in my household. And so when things come about that we really think that they should get, we're almost, you know, we're kind of surprised by it. So Gronkowski was a pleasant surprise. The fact that the Patriots became the first team this year, and I've got this in my list of superlatives. You know how I like to give, you know, superlatives along with the nitpicks here on Tuesdays. But in my list of superlatives today, I also have the fact that Patriots became the first team to rush for over 100 yards against the Steelers this year. And we mentioned this last week leading up to the show, but Steelers were the first team in NFL history, kids. First team in NFL history to hold each of their previous 8 opponents to 75 yards or less total rushing per game. And the Patriots go for, you know, what would normally be considered a middling amount of 104 on the ground, but that's still way better than anybody else accomplished. And you do that with Ben Jarvis, Green Ellis, and Danny Woodhead, and still no active Fred Taylor. So let's give the Patriots' offensive line a tremendous amount of credit for what transpired on Sunday. Not only because they managed to open up just enough hole to keep, Pittsburgh away.
And keep them honest.
Keep them honest. But they also kept Tom Brady relatively clean.
Oh, I mean,
they
absolutely did.
There was no official sack on Brady. There were a couple of late hits that were dirty, cheap shots, but you have to consider who they came from.
You could read the newspaper back there on most of his drops.
Very true. I mean, he had all stinking
my dad day. Actually, even he called me up, and he was nitpicking about the play they ran. They had just crossed midfield. I think they had 1st and 10 from about the 40, and they faked the double reverse.
Yeah.
And threw it to Tate, and it got batted away in the end zone.
Yeah.
He thought Brady was, like, showing off or showboating. But on that fake, he has to keep the ball down low and inside of his body
frame.
Because when those gunners cross, you don't know if
you don't know where the ball is.
Exactly.
That's right.
So that's part of the disguise of the fake.
Right.
The poor guy.
I'm glad you explained that.
And I'm
to
like,
him.
Well, if you're nitpicking about that, you know we had a pretty good week.
Absolutely, and I'm glad you took the time to explain it to him. It's good that you have some knowledge of that. I just felt like, the offensive line was really, it just stood out, and maybe that comes from having a week under their belts now with, you know, Logan Mankins back in there. And granted, Dan Connolly moved from, you know, the spot where he had been the first 7 weeks of the season, which was basically for Logan. He moved into Stephen Neal's spot because Neal didn't dress. So, you know, he was banged up with his shoulder.
Yeah, Fred was kind of deeming that as like a blessing in disguise.
It might have been.
That Neil didn't play.
It might have been because, you know, with a wounded wing, if he'd been in there, we don't know. I mean, we saw, I think, week before last against Cleveland, he was a liability.
Yeah, well, I hope, I mean, as well as it worked out against what they're going to face next week in the speed rush and all that stuff, you know, the Colts can get after the passer.
Well, it's very good that we have our tackles back in place, yeah. And we have a guard in Connolly who has played guard now for all, you know, 9 games this year, and you got one of the best guards in the country in Logan Mankins back in his place.
And given the ferocity and the kind of relentlessness that Colts pass rush brings,
sure.
I'm hoping that we have, like, all hands on deck this
absolutely.
Coming week.
Yeah, absolutely. So that good, and yes, you're right. That means Stephen Neal, hopefully a healthy Stephen Neal as well. But I'm effusive over the offensive line. I'm totally impressed. That being said, I'm also thrilled to death with the play of the linebacking core of the Patriots. We saw the front three and or four, but most of the time it was a front three, do an unbelievable job of two-gapping. I'm not so sure I've ever seen Vince Wilfork do a better job.
Vince had a phenomenal
He
game.
Did an unbelievable job of filling up two gaps.
Phenomenal.
And it allowed, you know, Gerard Mayo in particular to have a superb game. We saw, you know, Brandon Spikes have a superb game. Jermaine Cunningham,
Yeah, he made that dumb mistake on the goal line where he lined up in the neutral zone. That
yeah, exactly.
Me.
I mean, and that's got to be, you know, that's a rookie mistake. He's got to have better presence of mind
They panned the camera to Bill, and you could see he was
that. Okay, you just stole nitpick number two. I'm not going to have any nitpicks left today, but that was my other nitpick.
I still got one.
All right. That's fine. That was another nitpick. You've got to have, again, along the same lines of how I sort of equated the whole Brandon Merriweather thing to the PFW guys, how you got to have better field awareness of what's going on. Jermaine Cunningham has to know where he is in the neutral zone. He's focused. I know he wants to rush, but I mean, come on. You got a minute. Look down the line of scrimmage and look and see if your doggone hand is lined up in the neutral zone where it was.
That's the most fundamental thing.
It is.
That you learn when you're
absolutely the single most fundamental thing when you are a down lineman rushing the passer on the line of scrimmage.
And I mean, you should have when you're on the edge too. You're far away from the center,
but you gotta know.
But you should have your head turned slightly.
You gotta
looking
know.
Down the line
Absolutely.
Because you're going not so much on
and he's
sound,
looking,
but
if
the
you
movement
look,
of the ball.
I remember seeing the replay when they showed, you know, the invisible yard line.
Yeah.
You could clearly see
well
his hand
over.
across it, but you could see where his head was.
Yeah.
He was not cocked looking down the line
no.
there. He was looking straight ahead.
Stupid.
So that
tunnel vision.
Fundamentally, that was an incorrect play, and that's got to be addressed because, again, you're down there in a red zone situation where you can't afford to give a team an extra shot.
No, and it was on third down. And they had forced an incompletion, and
right.
you're thinking, all right, they're going to get off the field.
Right.
They eventually did, but, you know, you gave them an extra
But you
down.
Gave them an extra shot, and how many times is that going to come back and bite you in
yeah,
the long
and
run?
I think the problem, the mistake was, it was kind of, people paid more attention to it because of where on the field it happened.
Right.
So.
Right. You just can't make boneheaded plays in the red zone. And again, I'm willing now at this stage to still chalk it up to relative inexperience and youth.
Yeah.
But youth is sort of a relative thing anyway. I mean, these guys have played, you know, Cunningham and Spikes and McCourty. I mean, they played 3-4 years of college major Division I football. And even if you're Division II like Danny Woodhead, okay, you're still going to play football at a high enough level where you know the rules.
Especially
youth really should only be an excuse in professional football if – for some reason or another, you've been out of the game for a year or two, and then again, I would argue you probably wouldn't have the job that you have. Youth really should only be excused at the high school level,
where
and
you're
that's
learning.
It.
And that's where
when
you're
actually learning the sport. These guys need to know if they've advanced this far and they're talented enough, they need to know dumb things like, oh, my God, am I lined up in the neutral zone?
Yep.
Especially when you're in a goal-to-go situation, you're in the red zone, and you got a third down play coming up. You can't screw up. You must have presence of mind. It's one thing to just go out there and hit somebody and you know, pin your ears back and get after it. And I know a lot of times younger guys tend to play that way. Older guys play more cerebrally. If that's not a word, I just made it up.
You're fine.
But you still have to know. You still have some football knowledge in your brain. Use it!
Yeah.
You know, that's all I'm saying.
They're going to make mistakes, and there are some mistakes that you can chalk up to being a rookie and not having the experience. But that's one of those things where I don't care how young you are.
Yep.
If you're in the NFL, you don't do that.
That's
and there's no, this should be like a no tolerance policy.
Very true.
For lining up in the neutral zone.
I agree. I mean, that to me, that should be a kangaroo court type of fine in the locker room, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, come on. You
go put $50 in the jar.
$50 in the jar, you know, goes to charity at the end of the year or whatever, but you got to do that. I mean, that's just.
It goes to buying Tom's haircut.
You know, did you like the interview, by the way, with Tom, with Bob Costas at the show before the game? Did everybody see that?
I didn't see it.
You didn't see it? Okay. You know, and let me open this up to our listeners today and our participants here. If you saw the Brady interview with Bob Costas before the game, I'd really kind of like to know your thoughts. Number one, I thought Tom was actually very forthcoming. I thought he was very comfortable with Costas. Costas is a lot of different things, but he has always been a pretty good interviewer. He's one of the better interviewers. You know, I used to think, you know, the old Roy Firestone show on ESPN from a few years back when sometimes guys would come on the show and cry, and they did a whole parody of it, you know, in the whole Jerry Maguire movie, as you'll recall. But anyway, I mean, Firestone was a pretty good interviewer. He asked good questions, and guys seemed to, you know, relate to him. And I think, you know, in a real-life sense, a lot of players are like that with Costas. They respect Costas for the fact that he's been around for a while. And I thought Costas did a good job of getting the most out of Tom. What I didn't like, though, I mean, come on. All right, let's face it. They showed a lot of pictures of Tom pre-long hair.
Yep.
It was almost as if it's kind of like, yo, dude, this is what you used to look like, and now this is what you look like.
Yeah.
It was almost a subliminal NBC message, Tom. Cut your hair.
Yeah.
You know, and again, we shouldn't care one way or the other.
No.
And I don't. Personally,
I don't care as long as he throws the ball
well and we win. Who cares what anybody, you know, you can
it's
have Troy Polamalu.
Right
it's his right
to
do what he wants. You know, and the reason I'm bringing this up is because I know it's been a topic, you know, on radio stations, not just locally here. I'm talking about, I've heard it on ESPN radio. I've heard it all over the country. And the bottom line is, it's his flipping hair. Let him do what he wants, and we've been kidding around here on this show that, you know, hey, if your wife is Giselle Bundchen and she wants you to keep your hair long, you're going to keep your hair
long.
You'll
grow it till
you're going to grow until
comes.
Yeah, exactly. You'll look like you know,
Rapunzel.
Yeah, exactly. You'll look like the male version of Rapunzel, and that's fine. But I actually thought that even Costas talking about his hair,
there were undertones type.
Well, yeah, that, you know, throughout the whole conversation, there are undertones from the pictures they were showing of Tom. And again, they really don't have anything else to show because the only thing they have to go by are his pictures with basically crew cuts compared to what he has now.
That's what he came into the league.
Yes, you know, back in 2001.
I was watching one of those.
And then they showed it again in 2000, and, you know, during the 07 run where he had short hair, but he had a full beard to go with it.
I've seen that quite a few times with him.
You know, so I'm just like, I would like your opinion on it, whether or not you made it, you think it made Tom look positive or negative.
They did a bit that I did see. It was either the Browns week or the week before on NFL Sunday Countdown, the ESPN show on Sunday mornings.
Mm-hmm.
And you know how Kenny Mayne does his little satirical things, the main event?
Yeah,
I don't know if you're...
Right. Yeah,
he did
that
one with Brady and Justin Bieber going back and forth.
Yeah, well, it's goofy. I mean,
yeah,
but that, unfortunately, that's what he does is... He's a goofy, Kenny is a goofy guy, and that's all he does is goofy stories.
But it's not like I wasn't doing my homework. I was actually here on Sunday, work in the Special Olympics. So
that
I was giving some of my time.
Yeah, I bet that was fun.
I wasn't
though.
Not doing my homework.
Was that not a fun event, though?
It was a fun event.
Yeah, I knew
Long
it.
Day,
yeah.
But fun event.
Yeah, fun event. I'm glad that they were able to do that here. So I just want your thoughts on the Brady interview as well, because frankly, you know, I'm not so sure it made him look and made the Patriots look in the best of lights. And again, with all due respect to Costas, who I think is a pretty doggone good interviewer, still one of the best in the game. Just something about it didn't sit well with me. It's almost like they were giving us a holier than thou sort of, hey, Tom, cut your hair type of thing. And that didn't sit well with me. So I wondered if anybody else picked up that vibe.
I'm gonna have to go
on the
watch
Bob
it,
Costas
then.
Interview. Okay, there you go. So if you picked up on that vibe, or even if you didn't, webradio@patriots.com, or slip me a Facebook message, and we'll take it from there. Let me see if I can get in a couple of Facebooks here. Mary Beth says, I can relate to the, oh, my God, said a lot of that in my house, too, while pointing and saying, did you see that? That's good. During the course of the game? Yeah. Yeah, I can't believe it. My son and I sat on the couch together, and, you know, I'm working on my, you know, 85 other games I got going on. I just figured out the other day I've got a 15-game stretch in 28 days.
Wow.
15 games I'm doing in 28 days. That's a pretty busy schedule.
It'll be busy.
I'm grateful.
You'll have a ball, though.
I'm grateful, but it's busy. Nevertheless, I'm looking up from my computer in time to see, you know, Gronk catch another one. And so I'm looking at my son, and he's looking at me, and so he's like, okay, Dad, don't take this the wrong way, but he holds his hand up like that. And I'm like, you want a high five from me? Come on. Come on. Seriously? He's like, okay, I'll never let it happen again. So I give him a high five on that one. I'm just like, you know, that never happens. You know, it's kind of like I try to, you know, give him a high five, and he always stands by me. He's like, yeah, yo, Dad, that's kind of not kosher.
Well, you know what? That's actually you're kind of preparing him for if he ever steps into your line of work.
Oh, that's
one
true.
Day.
That's true.
Because there's no high fiving in the press box.
Yeah, that's
or the
true. But you know what though? That's true.
But this is part of being a kid, though.
Right.
You know,
and we're fans sitting there watching the
Absolutely.
Game. We're fans. All right. I'm not a journalist. I'm not a sport. I'm not a talk show host. I'm a fan watching that game.
No, I understand.
You know, and then I have to put on the journalist hat or the talk show host hat.
He's just slapping you down, putting you into place.
He is. By the way, Mary Beth sends another note on Facebook. She says, "Do fans really care how long his hair is?" No, I really don't think so. My whole point, however, Mary Beth, is I got the impression that NBC was sort of looking down at him. And again, maybe I just got the wrong impression from what they're doing. Maybe they're just goofing on the guy, and I guess that's fine because Brady has as good a sense of humor, I think, as just about anybody. I mean, he's a mild-mannered, easygoing guy who just happens to have hit pay dirt, jackpot, in all walks of life, okay? In his career, in his love life, in his, you know, banking life, I mean, everything, right? And so because of that, I just kind of thought they were thumbing their nose down at him. And again, maybe I just picked up on the wrong vibe here, but that's why I asked the question, and that's why I wanted to know if anybody else picked up on that. Simple as that. All right, let me see. What else do I have here? I got one more. Let me read a couple of other from Facebook, since we've got some others here that have taken the time to post. Paul sends this via Facebook. He says, "Last week I nitpicked that Brady didn't look like Brady of old. On Sunday night, he was outstanding and looked very much like the Brady we all knew and loved. Let's hope it continues. If there is to be a nitpick from Sunday, then it has to be the way the D lost its way a bit in the fourth quarter. Okay, they were playing prevent and trying to run down the clock by keeping the Steelers in bounds, but after having a lot of success early in the game, it would have been nice to see them continuing to play the same way until the end of the game."
I agree 110%.
"All in all, though, a fantastic team performance and result. Bring on the Colts." That's a great nitpick, Paul.
Especially because if you're playing prevent defense, the idea is to tackle them in bounds and make them take little bites, little chunks down the field. Don't let anybody get behind you.
Correct.
When I looked up the numbers on the drive chart, John, the Steelers scored 3 fourth-quarter touchdowns. None of those drives took more than 3 minutes.
Correct.
2 of them took less than 2 minutes.
Correct.
And they were all over 50 yards, so it wasn't like, you know, a 20-yard, you know, change of possession type deal.
Right.
2 of them were close to 80 yards, and in less than 2 minutes, that's unexcusable to me, no matter what kind of defense
you're playing. Again, and maybe that goes back to one of my overall nitpicks, was I still am of the impression that the Patriots' secondary is playing too soft, whereas we saw some great attack-type defense from the linebackers. And a lot of that, I think, has to do with the fact that, let's face it, Pittsburgh's offensive line was undermanned. Okay, they clearly missed their regulars on the left side. Jonathan Scott and some of those guys, God love them, you know, they just weren't ready. And the Patriots took advantage of it. So, again, give the Patriots credit for the proper game planning here. But the Steelers have some work to do on that left side of their offensive line, and the Patriots took advantage of that. That being said, while the Patriots were able to get 5 sacks on Ben Roethlisberger after having only 13 in the previous 8 games, which is extraordinary. And I posted that up on Facebook earlier today. I'm like, who the hell was this defense we just saw? My goodness, was this the same defense we're used to seeing? 5 sacks in 1 game after 13 in the previous 8. That's pretty good. That's, you know, now that means they're averaging, they've got 18 sacks in 9 games. They're averaging 2 sacks a game now. And that's actually respectable, is it not? That's respectable now. And yet, I don't think anybody would take a look at the Patriots' front 3, front 4, or pass rush. Let's just say, let's look at it at an overview here. You wouldn't look at the Patriots' pass rush and say adequate. You'd still say, it's lacking, needs improvement. And yet, they're averaging 2 sacks a game now.
Yep.
That's the kind of significance that Sunday's performance puts on the whole scheme of things.
And they probably could have had about 10 if Roethlisberger wasn't so strong and elusive in the pocket.
Yeah, well, you know what? He is a moose back there, isn't he?
He's a beast.
He's a moose. If you got defensive guy, you got linebackers and defensive linemen that can't bring his butt down.
He's about as big as a linebacker.
Well, he is a linebacker. He's a linebacker playing quarterback.
Yeah.
But you got guys that are, you know, still outweigh him, still can't bring him down. He's strong, man.
He's a big boy.
He's a bull ox is what he is.
And then especially with all these new cockamamie rules about in the grasp and,
right,
you know, contact to the head and all that stuff. You have guys just being so careful once you get near him, and that's unfortunate.
I just still thought overall, get back to the original point here, is that the Patriots' secondary is a little soft, and they did let up a little bit. Once they got that, you know, two-touchdown lead, they did soften their stance. Yeah, I think they did sort of change their approach. And I'm wondering why the approach changes. Why does it change? Is it more because they don't adjust game planning-wise, or is it more because they don't feel like there's any sense of urgency, or when, you know, Pittsburgh gets a first down or when Pittsburgh scores a touchdown, you still got an 11-point lead, and it's kind of like, well, you know what, there's no need to change anything, no need to get hot and bothered because we're going to go down and score again.
Yeah, well, like from my point of view, when I was trying to put on my coach's hat, trying to understand this, you're up 23-3 in the fourth quarter. The Steelers get the ball. And they started, that's when the prevent started, that first possession of the fourth quarter. And I'm thinking, okay, there was a noticeable difference in pressure, how many guys they were bringing. You could see it, and also the coverage. And I'm trying to think, okay, Bill's thinking we're up 3 touchdowns. If we play prevent and we force them to take 4 or 5 minutes off the clock to score,
right,
and not only that, once they get in the red zone, we'll button it up a little bit, and they may not even score, or they may take even longer to score. He's thinking between our offensive possessions and the way that we're going to play them on defense, we're not going to give them 3 more possessions. There's not going to be enough time.
Right.
But when in reality, the defense was so bad at the prevent, you're allowing a minute and 40-second 80-yard touchdown drives.
Right.
That's a problem.
It is a problem.
And that's what does Bill always preach? Situational football. And they were put in a great situation. And, yeah, they still won, and they still won relatively comfortably, even though it got a little bit nerve-wracking at the end.
2 touchdowns.
Yeah, but even though they put up 39, the way they executed their fourth-quarter game plan situationally,
it was almost as
it
if
didn't satisfy me.
It was almost if defense was an afterthought, that they thought that just by having the football on offense, they could run the clock out and get the game over with. And you're right, that left a little bit of an unsatisfying taste.
You remember like the San Diego game after they won, and they had the 20-3 lead in the fourth quarter. They ended up winning 23-20 on the missed field goal.
Right.
It was a win, but you kind of felt like, God, we were lucky, that
very
type
lucky
of deal. I didn't quite feel that, but I had a little bit of that in the pit of my stomach.
And I think part of that is because the defense, I mean, you could tell that the intensity level waned. It dropped.
Yeah.
And maybe that's, again, and the only thing I can come up with, and after thinking about this for a couple of days, the only thing I come up with is, again, still you largely have a young defense.
Yeah.
Okay? And so this is not something that is acquired overnight, that these guys have to learn how to play this way. They have to learn how to keep the intensity up.
See, the mentality that he could have took, John, is he could have stayed with what he was doing and realized, okay, they're down 3 scores. There's no more running the football.
Mm-hmm.
They have 1 quarter left to score 3 times, and we can't not give up any scores.
Yeah,
I would have been like, okay, you know he's dropping back to pass, or he's going to be in the shotgun every possession. Go after him.
Mm-hmm.
Send the hounds, force him to throw picks, hit him, do whatever you want. I mean, I would have just unleashed the beast. And that's why you'd see defenses in past years like the Vikings, like Jared Allen and those guys, when they got a lead of 1 or 2 possessions late in the game, that's when they were at their best because they just pinned their ears back. And when you know the other team's in an obvious passing situation, that's when you can get after it. They didn't. The Patriots didn't do that.
Right.
So,
all right, let's take a timeout here. Web radio at patriots.com. Ace Ticket Hotline is 508-543-7482. Join us on the program, won't you? And then, of course, Facebook is up and running as well. If you don't, or you have Facebook, but you don't know how to reach us, just find me, John Rook, J-O-H-N-R-O-O-K-E. Send the friend request, and we'll get you signed up and hooked up and ready to go. You can also get me via Twitter, at JRook0722, if you care about that as well. But we communicate here on the program via Facebook, via the chat function, and also page posting, and then webradio at patriots.com, which is the way we've always done it for 10 years now. And, of course, the Ace Ticket Hotline. And we'll come back and get into some of your nitpicks, also some superlatives, not just from the Patriots game, but a few choice ones from around the NFL you might not have been aware of, and we'll make you aware of them, coming up inside the playbook.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
I'm pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network. All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst. Randy Cross joins us here inside the playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2 on American Airlines Patriots.com. Radio.
So, Pat, how many Advantage miles have you racked up on American Airlines this year?
That's kind of a personal question, Brian.
It's nothing to be embarrassed about.
I'm not embarrassed.
Oh, okay, then I'll ask you again. How many miles have you racked up?
236,000.
Miles? That's got to be wrong, because I fly a lot more than you.
Well, flying isn't the only way you can earn Advantage miles, Brian.
Right. I knew that.
I mean, you can earn miles when you buy all kinds of stuff, you know? Stuff you use every day.
Also, like, you know, ping pong balls, Argyle socks, really tall ladders.
Like clothes, you know, movie rentals, gas for your car.
Oh, shish kebabs, Russian nesting dolls, snow globes.
I was thinking, like, newspapers, you know? When you bank, go to restaurants.
Oh, fake mustaches.
Yeah, Brian. You can earn miles when you go to a novelty store and buy a fake mustache.
Awesome.
You can earn Advantage miles for the stuff you buy every day, whatever that stuff may be. Learn more at aa.com/advantage. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
You may know that Verizon Fios has more HD channels than cable, but what you may not know is that now you can sign up for Verizon Fios with no term contract required. And if you're not absolutely satisfied, you can cancel with no early termination fees. That's right. You can get Fios TV, internet, and phone at a guaranteed low price of just $89.99 a month for a year with no term contract required. And if you don't love it, you can cancel with no early termination fees. Just call 1-866-892-6057. That's 1-866-892-6057, and you'll know why now is the best time to switch to Fios. Get your game face on. Play the Gridiron Challenge at patriots.com/gridironchallenge and enter for your chance to win tickets and a chance to win the grand prize, an all-inclusive trip to the big game. Brought to you by Verizon. For official rules and terms, visit patriots.com/gridironchallenge. For new customers only, equipment charges, taxes, and fees and other terms apply. Rate may increase after 1 year. Fire service is available in select areas. Offer expires 9/18/10. Call for more details.
Okay, I'll have the Giganto Burger with Cheese Combo.
Oh, will that be all?
That's it.
Go, Pats!
What?
If you're like this man, you have what is known as a healthy obsession with the Patriots.
Hi, just the jeans today?
Yeah, thanks.
Go, Pats!
Okay, that was weird.
I know, right?
At Bank of America, we understand, and we can help.
I'll just take this when you're ready.
Oh, here you go.
Go, Pats!
Indeed, go, Pats.
With Patriots checking from Bank of America, you can do more than just tell the world about your loyalty. You can show them by getting the Patriots logo on your checks and debit cards.
I say, here's a baguette. Go long.
I'm open.
Whoops.
Ask your Bank of America associate if Patriots checking is right for you. Or go to bankofamerica.com/patriots.
Bank of America N.A. Member FDIC. Copyright 2010 Bank of America Corporation. An account setup fee may apply in some states.
Now's your chance to hit up John Rook inside the playbook on the Ace Ticket Hotline at 508-543-7482.
In the playbook for a Nitpick Tuesday here on Patriots.com Radio, I'm John Rook, web radio at Patriots.com. Send us your nitpicks if you have some from the game. I know I realize that this may have been one of the better regular season performances by this team. Certainly most unexpected regular season performances by this team in some time, but nevertheless, leave it to us to always find something to nitpick about. That's what we do, and I think we do it as well as anybody. So anyway, web radio at patriots.com, 508-543-7482, and Facebook as well. Now, to me, one of the key swings in the game, and I'm sure that this has been discussed, but I would certainly stand to right in behind the line here. Key swing in the game is when Hines Ward took the helmet-to-helmet hit and went out of the game. He is a gutsy, gritty, absolute future Hall of Fame wide receiver. He's tough. He personifies the Steelers, and the Steelers personify him. They go hand in hand. He is a perfect, perfect player and personality for the Steel City. No question about it. So when he went out, that did seem to me to literally take a little starch out of their shirts collectively. The thing that I find curious about the whole Hines Ward thing, I mean, we realize that injuries are a part of this. It's kind of like, you know, hey, the Patriots were kind of stunned, too, when Wes Welker went down last, you know, January against Houston. I mean, let's face it. You know, whenever you got a guy who gives his heart and soul out there in the field to the team, you see him go down and he gets hurt, well, yeah, it's going to bother you a little bit. It's human nature for that to happen. So, you know, I'm, in a sense, excusing the Steelers a little bit, even though, if I was looking at it from a Pittsburgh point of view, there's no way I'd excuse him.
Yeah, I'd be curious to see what the prognosis is for Hines.
Here's the thing. Mike Florio, posting on PFT, says it was dubbed a neck injury during the game. Post-game press conference.
Concussion.
It was called a concussion.
Yeah. It looks like a concussion.
Well, it certainly did. And again, you know, it was an inadvertent hit. It wasn't.
I don't think it was dirty.
It wasn't dirty. It wasn't dirty. If you looked at it and look at it again and again, two helmets collided. That's going to happen. Nobody was targeted here. It just happens in this game.
And that's that whole argument, John, that we went over when that whole weekend happened with all the illegal hits. Hines was getting down. He was almost in the process of being tackled. And it lowers that target area. So when the guy comes in to hit him, instead of hitting him in the chest.
Well, and he's down and his head's down. Yeah, right. Yeah. Here's the quote from Ward, according to Ed Bichette, who we talked to last week here on the show.
Yeah. Playbook guest.
Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, he says, Ward says, I was fine. I had to hurry up, get off the field like I always do. I guess I stumbled a little bit, took all the tests. I was fine to go back in, but I guess the NFL's got their rules or something. You got to abide by the rules, I guess. Well, the rule, of course, as you may well know, is that if a guy has a concussion, he can't go back in the game, which is why I found it curious that they called it a neck injury initially. Because I think they were trying to circumvent the rule, trying to get him back in the game. Hines wanted to go. Yeah. The Steelers wanted him to go.
It was that's a tough situation.
But he couldn't go because the doctors were saying it was a concussion.
And, of course, you don't know what they're saying because they're team neurologists and stuff like that. You know, they could say one thing, but then, obviously, what's good for the goose is good for the gander, I guess. They might say it's
an expert. I will also allow that the Steelers might not have had sleight of hand in mind here, that they were trying to pull a fast one over the NFL by saying, oh, he's got a neck injury, it's not a concussion. I will allow that they might have said he had a neck injury simply to throw the Patriots off guard.
Yeah.
That, you know, if they say he had a neck injury, well, then the Patriots have to assume. Right, Patriots have to assume he's coming back.
Yeah.
So maybe that keeps them from adjusting, however. I don't know, but I will allow that could have been a possibility.
Oh, yeah.
On the Steelers' end.
It could have been part of the chess match.
Here's the other thing. I'm wondering, though, that if there's a rule, and Florio brings this up on PFT, and I think it's a very good point. I'm wondering that if a guy is deemed to have a concussion, okay? So I guess I'm coming to the Steelers' defense a little of this on this one. If a guy has a concussion, why is he still out on the field?
Yeah,
where he could obviously get run into and concussed again.
Or why isn't he getting treatment?
He should be. They could stick him in a closet like Mike Leach likes to stick his players in a cold, dark closet and say, here, get in there.
But, I mean, they could have taken him back in and done a bunch of other tests and stuff to him, I'm sure.
Yeah. Well,
at least get him out of his pads.
Exactly. You know, the guy's got a concussion. He's not going to return to the game. So why is he still out there on the field?
And most players, like we've discussed with Kevin Faulk, when you're in a weird situation and you don't think you're going to come back in, you can't even be out there because it's just so... You know, you're filled with anxiety, and it's too painful for you to be watching the game. I don't know.
I just think that there's probably a little bit of a sleight of hand there that probably needs some splaining to do, Lucy. You know, I happen to think that that's the case. Now, again, it may not be the Steelers' fault here, but there needs to be some sort of explanation from Hines Ward point of view, from the Steelers' point of view, from the NFL point of view.
Mm-hmm.
Granted, hey, if you're the Patriots, you know, hey, the guy didn't return to the game. It clearly took a physical presence out of the game. for the Steelers. And that certainly did not hurt the Patriots' chances.
He's a really underrated run blocker, too, as a wide receiver. He's phenomenal.
Sure.
He'll take on linebackers, linemen. He's ferocious blocking from end and all.
Sure. I just thought it was, you know, sort of a curious point. But to me, you know, the emotional swing in that game came when Hines Ward went down. In case you haven't heard today, the Steelers also cut longtime kicker Jeff Reed.
What an ugly, ugly field goal that was.
Yeah, that was pretty bad. We couldn't believe that he shanked
that. It looked like the Ocean Spray kick at Foxborough.
No, the Ocean Spray kicks don't even get off the ground hardly. But honestly, I mean, I said this to my son when he shanked that one. How long was the shank? From 20 what? 23?
20, I think it was 26.
26, 27, whatever. When he just pushed it right, it looked like one of my tee shots.
It barely would have made it over the crossbar.
Oh, yeah. It looked like one of my tee shots. It really did. I just, psh, off the side. I'm like, where the hell did that come from? I said that to my son, and he looked at me. Before I could even get the words out of mouth, he says, Reed's cut. He said that. I swear, as God is my witness.
Wow.
He said,
good call.
He said, Reed's gone. They're going to cut him. And I said, oh, come on. What are you talking about? He's been there forever. Well, sure enough, it was an oh-by-the-way press release.
Yeah, it was.
That the Steelers issued today that basically announced the arrival of Sean Sweesham.
Yeah, who was basically run out of town by the Redskins
and
for missing a bunch of kids.
And who was the odd man out last week when the Patriots signed Graham.
Yeah.
It was either going to be Graham or Sweesham coming here, and they opted Graham. So that left Sweesham on the open market.
He looked like it. Oh, he looked awful in Washington. He got chased out of there.
Well, for what it's worth, the Patriots probably took the right one, although we do know that, you know, there was an extra point missed.
Yeah, that was ugly.
That would be another nitpick, but you know what?
That drove me nuts, too.
Yeah, but you know what? I'm willing to allow that. I mean, first of all, you're still working, even though he has familiarity with the snapper, that he's played with him before, you know, the holder. I mean, I noticed on the extra point, the snap was up and in on Mesko.
Yeah.
Okay, I remember Mesko had to actually reach back over his left shoulder to pull the snap in and then move it to the ground, and that's when the extra point got shanked.
Got pushed, yeah.
So really, and I told my son this when we were watching the game, he said, oh, he missed the extra point. Oh, that's terrible. Oh, Patriots should cut him. Oh. And I'm like, no. Hold on. Wait. First of all, the snap was horrible.
Yeah.
So if you're going to blame anybody on that kick,
Cotula.
It's got to come to Cotula, right? I mean, again, I'm going to cut him some slack. It's his first game.
It's that unit's first game working
together. It's their first game together as a unit. Going to cut him some slack. They did get, what, 3 field goals out of the thing, right?
Yeah.
So, again.
Yeah, he made like 31 and 36, your average kicks.
Which he should be making, okay? You're an NFL kicker. You should be making those kicks. I realize that Heinz Field is a little bit of a special place, but you should be making those. And so that can be allowed. That can be allowed. At any rate, Jeff Reed, a little bit more on him. The statement said, to make room for Sweesham, the Steelers released kicker Jeff Reed. Reed was in his ninth year, was just 15 of 22 on field goal attempts this season. Reed ranks second in team history with 919 career points. Gosh, it's a heck of a way to treat your second leading scorer all time in team history, isn't it? With a, oh, by the way, sort of press release? Come on. Yeah, he did shank the 26-yarder, but he was not the reason the Steelers lost the game on Sunday.
No, they had plenty of other reasons.
They had plenty of other reasons. But I did want to make mention of that in case you hadn't heard that today, because that is a byproduct of teams when they put up disappointing efforts and they perform disappointingly.
Yeah, someone's head's going to be
somebody's head's going to roll, and that's basically what happened.
Can I get my nitpick out of the way, John?
Please.
I've been waiting to get it off.
Go right ahead.
Because it hasn't been mentioned during PFW or this.
Then go.
Fine program.
By all means, let it rip.
Mine, even though the offense played pretty well, mine's with the wide receivers and the tight ends. Not so much Gronk, but Hernandez.
All right, you got
catching the football.
Explain.
Tate had at least one egregious drop that stalled the drive. Welker had one over the middle that on first and 10 that killed the drive.
Very uncharacteristic of West, though.
Welker also had another one that he says he should have caught. He said he should have caught 10 passes. He only caught 8.
Mm-hmm.
Hernandez had a wide receiver screen that looked like it might have been going places that hit him right in the hands that he dropped. He only got 2 targets, had 0 catches during the game. So mine's more with the wide receivers. I think they could have done a little bit better of a job hanging on to the football. And I think part of that frustration that Brady showed on the sideline was kind of directed toward them being, you know, more focused and catching the ball. That is my nitpick.
Okay. I think that's a good one.
It's a little one, but there was definitely drops that stuck out that killed drives.
I actually think it's a very good one. It's a very good one. It's actually, that's one that I don't even think I had written down.
Especially,
so that's good that you brought it up.
Especially on first down, like the Welker and the Tate drops, those kill drives. Because instead of another first and 10 or a second and 2, now all of a sudden you're at second and 10. And it just makes a huge difference when you're trying to convert for a first down.
No question. The one that Tate dropped really kind of
was off.
Yeah, that
and
was.
It was
bad.
Over midfield too.
Yeah, yeah. That hurt. That was a groaner.
And that Welker ball, he was looking for Ryan Clark coming to decapitate him again.
Yeah. All right. Let's get back to some nitpicks here. This one comes from. Ooh, here we go. Let me start off with these. It came a little bit earlier today. Mary Beth wrote earlier, she says, much less to nitpick this week, penalties, end of the game let down by the D, which we brought up on both occasions, but less than the previous week. All right, very good. This one comes from David. David nitpicks, can't make the show, but my biggest gripes were penalties that weren't called. Mendenhall's 34-yard run came off an illegal block in the back. Wilfork would have had a sack had the guard not jumped on his back and ridden him to the ground, and the pass interference at the 8... Defender was facing the ball. It was to his side. It was the receiver who initiated the contact coming over. I thought both players were entitled to the ball. Shoddy calling gave the Steelers extra chances they shouldn't have had. I think that's the Merriweather one that we were talking about.
See,
with Paul.
See, I disagree.
Earlier.
I think
I really don't have a problem, with all due respect, David. I don't have a problem with the call on Merriweather. I don't think Merriweather was focused. He was not focused so much on the receiver as he was the ball.
Which I can't necessarily fault him for, but he did go through the receiver to make his path to the ball.
And you can't do that.
And he also locked arms with him once he got position
on
him.
And you can't do that. I mean, that's the rule.
And I can understand why fans are upset, because at first blush on the TV, when that ball went up in the air and it started coming down and you first saw Merriweather, he looked like he was in better position to make the play than Wallace did.
Right.
It looked like he was the receiver.
Right.
So I can understand why some of the fans are upset.
I don't think I remember seeing that on the Mendenhall run.
No, I brought it up in PFW.
Did you?
And there was Heath Miller was blocking spikes, and came from the side, grabbed his like right arm right up under his his helmet, where his shoulder pads kind of connect, and just hooked him, and that's what opened that hole up right on Brandon Spikes. It was clear as day. I saw it on two or three replays.
Wow. Okay.
And when it happened live. I leapt up from the couch and was screaming about it. And then when I saw the replays, it was even more apparent.
Interesting. Steven says the pass interference on Merriweather was garbage. Well, okay, we'll have to agree to disagree on that one, Steven. And then John says, hate to say it, but it was the pass interference because Merriweather grabbed the receiver's arm. Well, and yeah, we did say that they had locked arms, and unfortunately that is the rule. So, you know, whether or not you thought it was a fair call or not, fact is that is the rule. They locked. And it's going to get called every time. So that's the way it works. You may have thought it didn't look well, but I think Merriweather is definitely he's definitely at fault in that particular instance. I'm looking for better presence of mind on the field. Better awareness of where you are on the field. Not only of where the ball is located, but what the time, down, and distance also is on the field. This is all about field awareness. You know, you hear the term court awareness in basketball or ice awareness in hockey. I mean, it's the same thing. It's the same thing in football. You got to know where you are and what the situation is before you react. Brad from the Eastern Shore is on the Ace Ticket Hotline. Brad, welcome into the playbook.
Hey, good afternoon. Good afternoon. Good game. Hard to find nitpicks, but there always are a few, as Bill Belichick would say.
Yes, yes.
A couple of them that I saw. The defensive middle of the field from 10 yards to forever seems to be open anytime somebody wants to step in there.
Yeah, that's kind of along the same lines, Brad, of what I've been saying really all season long about this Patriots secondary. While I think that now we're learning that they're athletic enough to make plays, they still line up and defend way too soft. There's a huge hole where I don't think there really necessarily has to be one.
Well, and you can't expect Spikes, who we all agree is a thumper going downhill, but is most likely a liability trying to backpedal, or Mayo, who really hasn't shown he's that great at dropping back into coverage.
Sure, sure.
And so that leaves that hole, and these 15-yard square ends and the 12 and 15-yard slant patterns, not only are they catching them, but there's 15 more yards mm-hmm. after they catch it. And, you know, I don't understand why, you know, the Merriweather situation, is he, you know, is he being baited to, you know, by the quarterback to look somewhere else, and so he's taken three steps to the outside, and that just leaves that middle wide open. But that's, to me, that was the biggest nitpick. I thought the refs were choking on the flags, you know, for Pittsburgh to a great degree, and I'm not a real ref basher,
mm-hmm.
but early in the game, you saw Sanders come down and absolutely just stick his arm out and shove McCourty,
yep.
and then he broke off the route, caught the ball, and stepped out of bounds.
Yeah.
And the ref is standing. I mean, he stepped out of bounds and handed the ref the ball.
And so, they nailed Gronk for an offensive pass yes. interference in the game, too. You know.
And it's like, wait yeah. a minute. He ran. He didn't push off. All he did was raise his arms up as he turned so that he could catch the ball.
Right.
It wasn't like he shoved them outwards. He ran into the guy, turned, put his arms up. As he was turning, put his arms up. The guy didn't even go backwards. That's what was weird. On the Gronk one, whereas mm-hmm. McCourty took two steps backwards after he shoved him. And, you know, the ref standing right there, and it's like, wow, you're calling offensive pass interference on Gronk on a questionable call. I agree with everybody. I think Merriweather, I thought you made an excellent point. Merriweather just doesn't have the field awareness to understand where he needs to be.
I've got no other explanation for it, to be quite yeah. honest with you. I really don't, Brad. I wish I did. I still like Brandon Merriweather. I think he's got great talent, but I think his head, his smarts have got to catch up to his physical play.
Yeah, and I think a lot of times, depending on your position, and I'm not saying some guys are, you know, need to be smarter than others, because I think everybody has to be smart, but it is true. There are some positions where you can get away with not being the brightest bulb in the group. And still be very physically gifted mm-hmm. and make up for it.
Yeah.
Deep safety is not that position. You know, if you don't know what you're doing prior to the snap,
yeah.
then it's going to be catch up the whole game, and you're catching up to the sideline is what you're basically doing.
I think that's very good points by you.
I think McCourty, you know, what did Belichick say about McCourty? When in the combine, he was telling him what the defensive tackle was doing before the snap.
Mm-hmm.
That's somebody who gets it. That's somebody who says, this is where I am going to need to be on this play. Not 2 seconds after the ball is snapped, say, oh, blank, I should be over there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because to me, that's what we've seen out of him all year long, is I'm there a step late, or, you know, I'm trying to make the huge hit after the guy's made the 30-yard completion.
That makes sense to me. That makes good sense to me.
But I think I think our defense is coming together. I love the aggression. I don't care if we do give up a few plays against Peyton Manning. The years we beat Peyton Manning were the years where McGinnis was in his face all game long. And, you know, that's what we need. We need that game against from our defense of getting after Peyton, give up a couple big plays, but make him nervous enough that he's throwing the pick.
Well, I hope that the defense, whatever the game plan will be, I hope it can be similar. My guess is, though, is that, see, one of the things they wanted to do against Roethlisberger was to keep him hemmed in the pocket, because Roethlisberger, I think, is a more dangerous quarterback when he is able to scramble or he's able to run, especially to his right. I mean, he's one of the few guys in the league that can be more accurate when he's on the run than he is when he's standing back in the pocket. That's not the case with Manning. The Patriots need to collapse the pocket on Manning and force him to run. And so in that regard, I think that's where the game plan certainly will not be similar to what we saw this past Sunday.
No, but if you remember the game where Ty Law intercepted him three times,
mm-hmm.
all three of those interceptions, he was on the move when he threw the ball.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, you know, and so we've got to
flush him from the pocket.
Yep, yep. We need strong up the middle pressure. Move him off his spot, and have a defense secondary that's actually playing close.
Well, that's. You know, you're going right where I'm going. You know what? We're thinking a lot alike here, Brad. I mean, honestly, I mean, that's exactly where I'm going with this, and I probably will be harping on it most of the week. My great concern for this next Sunday will be the Patriots' ability or inability, one way or the other, to be able to match up with, like, Pierre Garçon, who scares the daylights out of me, simply because are you know, I can see Manning, you know, absolutely shredding them for 12 to 15 yards at a pop because they're playing too soft.
Yep, he'll never throw a 40-yard pass all game long. You'll see him throw a 40-yard pass.
But he will kill us with the 12 to 15-yard ones that have basically, you know, have been the bane of our existence this year.
Yep. No, I don't understand. I have not understood since the Jets game when they did that to us why every team in the league didn't look at the Jets and go, oh, forget throwing the 50-yard bomb. Just kill them 12 yards at a time.
Yeah, yeah. That's exactly right. And that's what's going on. That's what's happening. That's the book on the Patriots defense. If there is such a thing, that's the book.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're going to find 12, 15 yards before you know it. Seven plays later, boom, you're in the end zone.
And what did Colt McCoy do against us? When Hillis wasn't running all over us,
yeah, that's
he
exactly
was throwing 9 and 12-yard passes.
And, yeah, exactly.
And completing every one of them.
Exactly. I mean, now, Colt had a little help from the Patriots, but the fact is that that's what the you know he was getting, and that's what he was taking advantage of. And so that does scare me about this Sunday.
Yep.
Hopefully, hopefully, Brad, they can find a way to adjust like we saw them adjust this past week.
Well, and that's what I'm really hoping is that somehow we get the lead. We play so much better, and it doesn't have to be a big lead.
Yeah.
Just a 6-point lead makes such a difference to this defense.
I agree.
They don't get tight, and they start actually, you know, making plays. But if we get down 6 or 10 points, you know, I think Peyton Manning's just going to pick them apart.
I just hope, though, that this defense doesn't decide to go soft, you know, like we saw it happen against Pittsburgh. I mean, you get up by a couple of scores, you got to keep up the tempo. You got to keep up the pressure.
Hey,
somebody needs to scream on the sideline like we saw Brady scream on the sideline on Sunday at his offense.
And how did we win our first Super Bowl? We beat the greatest team on turf into the ground physically.
Yeah, that's true.
How do you beat Peyton Manning?
You got to beat him
you
up.
You beat him into the ground.
Right.
You beat his receivers up.
Hey, if you can do what you did to Pittsburgh this last week, you can certainly do it to Indianapolis.
Exactly. Because they don't have tough receivers.
No.
They don't have a Fitzgerald. They don't have a Bolden. Those guys are all the 5'11", 190-pound range.
Yeah, yeah.
You clean their clocks a couple times, and they're going to start looking before they catch the ball.
Garcon scares me, though. He just scares me. We'll talk about that later this week.
All right.
He just scares me. Hey, great call. Thanks, Brad. All right, you got it. So there you go. Brad on the Ace Ticket Hotline. 508-543-7482. That's how you reach us here on the show. Web radio at patriots.com. Facebook page as well. Let's get the timeout in here. We'll come back with more of your nitpicks. I got some superlatives that I need to pass along because I promised I would do that here in the playbook.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
We're pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2 on American Airlines Patriots.com. Radio.
So, Pat, how many Advantage miles have you racked up on American Airlines this year?
That's kind of a personal question, Brian.
It's nothing to be embarrassed about.
I'm not embarrassed.
Oh, okay, then I'll ask you again. How many miles have you racked up?
236,000.
Miles? That's got to be wrong, because I fly a lot more than you.
Well, flying isn't the only way you can earn Advantage miles, Brian.
Right. I knew that.
I mean, you can earn miles when you buy all kinds of stuff, you know? Stuff you use every day.
Also, like, you know, ping pong balls, Argyle socks, really tall ladders.
Like clothes, you know, movie rentals, gas for your car.
Oh, shish kebabs, Russian nesting dolls, snow globes.
I was thinking, like, newspapers, you know? When you bank, go to restaurants.
Oh, fake mustaches.
Yeah, Brian. You can earn miles when you go to a novelty store and buy a fake mustache.
Awesome.
You can earn Advantage miles for the stuff you buy every day, whatever that stuff may be. Learn more at aa.com/advantage. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
You may know that Verizon Fios has more HD channels than cable, but what you may not know is that now you can sign up for Verizon Fios with no term contract required. And if you're not absolutely satisfied, you can cancel with no early termination fees. That's right. You can get Fios TV, internet, and phone at a guaranteed low price of just $89.99 a month for a year with no term contract required. And if you don't love it, you can cancel with no early termination fees. Just call 1-866-892-6057. That's 1-866-892-6057, and you'll know why now is the best time to switch to Fios. Get your game face on. Play the Gridiron Challenge at patriots.com/gridironchallenge and enter for your chance to win tickets and a chance to win the grand prize, an all-inclusive trip to the big game. Brought to you by Verizon. For official rules and terms, visit patriots.com/gridironchallenge. For new customers only, equipment charges, taxes, and fees and other terms apply. Rate may increase after 1 year. Fire service is available in select areas. Offer expires 9/18/10. Call for more details.
Okay, I'll have the Giganto Burger with Cheese Combo.
Oh, will that be all?
That's it.
Go, Pats!
What?
If you're like this man, you have what is known as a healthy obsession with the Patriots.
Hi, just the jeans today?
Yeah, thanks.
Go, Pats!
Okay, that was weird.
I know, right?
At Bank of America, we understand, and we can help.
I'll just take this when you're ready.
Oh, here you go.
Go, Pats!
Indeed, go, Pats.
With Patriots checking from Bank of America, you can do more than just tell the world about your loyalty. You can show them by getting the Patriots logo on your checks and debit card.
I say, here's a baguette. Go long.
I'm open.
Whoops.
Ask your Bank of America associate if Patriots checking is right for you. Or go to bankofamerica.com/patriots.
Bank of America N.A. Member FDIC. Copyright 2010 Bank of America Corporation. An account setup fee may apply in some states.
Now's your chance to hit up John Rook inside the playbook on the Ace Ticket Hotline at 508-543-7482.
All right, here we go. Hour number two inside the playbook. You know, I don't know why it is. Yeah, go ahead, play it. Please do. You know what it is? Yeah, play the Pete one. That's even better.
It'll be John Halam on the mound against El Duque.
Makes me laugh every time I hear it.
That's why I'm here.
He's good-natured about that. You know what it is? It's because I got all these games going on. And I've
heard that from someone.
I've got a million, you know, it's a good problem to have. I just got a million different things going on in my head at once. Oh my God.
Too many voices up there, man.
I got to settle down.
I want what you're drinking.
I got to take a chill pill. That's what I got to do. I got to slow down. Hard for me to slow down. I'm a very energetic kind of guy. What can I tell you? All right, I told you I was got superlatives, so I'm going to give you some superlatives here. This one you probably knew, but it's significant because it's significant, and I'm going to pass it on again. Gronkowski, you know, we've hammered him for some of the drops this year. He is a rookie, right? So I know a lot of us are, you know, cutting him certainly some slack where that's concerned. Obviously, it was his first NFL 3-touchdown game. He now has 6 touchdowns for the season. 6 touchdowns are a record for most touchdown catches by a rookie tight end in Patriots history. Previous record was held by Russ All-World Francis. By the way, you just can't say Russ Francis. It has to be Russ All-World Francis. Okay, that was 4 touchdowns that he had in 1975. And Don Hasselbeck, father of Matt and Tim, who had 4 touchdowns as a Patriots tight end rookie in 1977. God, he's my age. Holy crap. He was a rookie in 77? No, he's 4. He's a little older than me. He's older. He scored on a 19-yard touchdown pass from Brady in the first, a 9 in the third, and then a 25er in the fourth. He's the first Pats player to have 3 touchdowns in a game since Moss had 3 against Jacksonville last year. How soon we forget. Okay, so this is back-to-back games, though, where Patriots tight ends have come up big. We kind of miss it and gloss over because of the El Stinkeroo that was put up against Cleveland, but Aaron Hernandez had 2 catches in that game. And then Gronk adds 3 more in this game. Pretty good stretch for Patriots tight end. By the way, there just may not be a better blocking tight end in recent memory than Algie Crumpler and what we've seen him do. Have you taken a look at the replays? Have you watched him come off the line of scrimmage? Have you seen what the guy does? He's a huge reason why the Patriots running backs got a crease against that Pittsburgh defensive front, number one. And he's another huge reason why Tom Brady has kept a clean jersey this year. Algie Crumpler can still play. He can catch whenever necessary, but his blocking is extraordinary. Extraordinary. You got to watch him. Do yourself a favor. Watch 82, especially when you think it's a running down, okay? Watch 82 this week. when he's in the game, you think it could be a run play. Watch what he does. He does the little things that, you know, just this is why the Patriots went after a guy like that. Wes Welker, by the way, also extended his streak to 72 straight regular season games with at least one reception. Yes, I know he had a drop, very un-Wes-like. I think we'll cut him some slack on that one. He's got at least one pass in each of his now 58 games as a member of the Patriots, including three in the postseason. Last time Welker has not caught a pass, December, it was actually Christmas Eve, 2005, when he was a member of the Dolphins. The Patriots' record, in case you were wondering, for most consecutive games with at least one pass reception is 63. That was by Ben Coates from 92 to 96. So he now has five more games to go to match it, six more games to beat Ben Coates' record. He needs one catch in at least each of the next six games to set the new Patriots record. His own personal streak, though, is at 72 straight, going back to his time with the Dolphins. And by the way, one more for you. It's Brady's first 300-yard game of the season and the 31st of his career with a 350 that he put on the board against the Steelers on Sunday. All right, back to the emails. Okay. Craig in Ottawa sent this one. He says, Patriots seem like the deepest team in the league already. What identity do you see them taking on next year when they can potentially add six picks in the top 100 players in college? Oh, don't forget, we're also getting players like Bodden, Kazier, Falk, and Warren back. Even if we don't add free agents, that seems like a talented group heading into training camp, especially if the new CBA allows a few extra roster spots. Belichick would be salivating. Can't argue that point. I just hope we have, you know, a season next year in which we can all salivate. If you get all of those guys back, Bodden in theory, Kazier, we think, Falk, we think, Warren, we certainly believe that would be the case, and you actually will have seven picks in the top four rounds that, in theory, you could hold on to, chances are that ain't going to happen. Chances are they're going to package a couple of those and aim for like a one or a two probably within the next year or two. I think you can almost guarantee now that's going to happen. They may even trade down on one of the two first rounders they have if the Raiders continue to be competitive in the AFC West. And that pick is going to be around the same pick as the Patriots. Don't be shocked, kids. Don't be shocked if you see the Patriots either deal down or move it for another one in the future. It could happen. It could happen. I think the only way that they keep both of those picks, quite honestly, is if somehow Oakland goes in the tank and that pick turns into a top, like, 10 or 15 pick. If it does, then I think you got a better chance of keeping them. But if both of those picks are 20-something, they're going to keep one and they're going to move the other for extra picks in the future. It's going to happen. I know it as well as I know my own middle name. So just don't be surprised if you see that happen in April.
Which is what, by the way?
Michael.
There you go.
Okay.
That's not as embarrassing as I was hoping.
No. Not bad. Okay, Jorgen from Denmark sends this in. John, my nitpick of the day. Graham's kickoffs, they were short and were followed by long returns. Most landed around the 0 to 5 yard line, and Pittsburgh had seven returns for 170-plus yards. Any chance we'll make the Zoltan kickoff? He's got a monster leg.
Let me tell you, any kick to the 5 yard line or the goal line is not short. They were just line drives. That was the problem.
Yeah, his problem was, yeah, he just, I would
have. You're spoiled by Gostowski kicking it through the end zone.
Because he can kick it through the back of the end
zone. That's extra long.
And he's amongst, you know, the NFL leaders in touchbacks.
But as long as you're getting the ball down to the five or the goal line,
you're doing okay.
That's not short.
But he's just got to get more elevation. He's got to get more loft on the ball. And again, that is something that obviously he can work out with, you know, extra work. Number two, it's also incumbent upon your, you know, kick return team to get the hell down there.
I was actually
and make a play.
I was actually pleasantly surprised viewing him for the first time on his kickoffs because I thought it would be like 10 yard line.
Well, maybe. I mean, we're used to seeing the balls go into the end zone because of ghost kicks, but you know his leg. But frankly, what we got, I don't really have a problem.
It was
with.
Definitely serviceable. I was expecting the ball to land at like the 10, and he surpassed that pretty much on every kickoff.
Chris in Seattle, I don't really have a new nitpick for this week. What a great game! I'm so happy about Gronk's contributions, and I really like what I'm seeing with Chung. By the way, that's another good point. Pat Chung coming back and announcing his return from an injury with authority.
Yeah.
He was superb. I mean, that was an all-pro type of game is what that was from Patrick Chung. O-line and D-line both set the tone for their side of the ball. And, of course, Brady. Really another great team win. But watching the game last night between the Eagles and Redskins has gotten me to thinking, how fun would it be to have a rematch of Super Bowl 39, Eagles versus Patriots? Both teams have changed radically since then, but I think they're both in great position to make it to the big game. And I think it would be about as exciting as a matchup as I can think of. Vic and Brady. Wow, that would be cool. I got to give that some thought.
One of my roommates who I was watching the game with for a little bit last night actually brought that point up. Because when I was watching the Eagles-Colts game last week, I proclaimed them as my favorite to go to the Super Bowl.
The Eagles?
In the NFC. And nobody's really picking them, and I was kind of proud of the fact that my pick stood out this week.
I think the Eagles stand as good a chance as anybody in the NFC right now, sure.
And I picked them last week, so we'll see what happens.
That would, certainly would be a marquee matchup. There's no question about it. If I'm the Patriots,
I wouldn't mind.
If I'm the Patriots, again, here's a guy that, like Peyton Manning, you got to keep hemmed into the pocket.
It would certainly be interesting.
No question.
He would be unlike any other quarterback the Patriots have really faced.
Now, would that be a complete reclamation story? Not to, throw Weiss water on this, but
imagine
if he won the Super Bowl, Michael Vick won the Super Bowl. Oh my God,
that would be absurd.
You talk about coming all the way back. I mean, we're talking about a guy who spent what? How many months in prison did he spend? 20 months? 18 months? Yeah, no kidding. That would be one of the more remarkable comeback stories maybe in all of sport.
Would the Eagles be introduced, down in Dallas at the Super Bowl to who let the dogs out? Woof, woof.
Somebody will do that anyway. Shane.
Hide your beagle.
Yes.
It's an eagle.
Hide your beagles. Shane in Miami. John, I like the big playability of Brandon Tate. I think the Patriots need to find a way to get the ball in his hands more often. I would agree, but unfortunately, they tried to do that this last weekend.
Don't drop the ball.
He dropped
one. It's an easy fix.
Hey, if you don't drop the ball, you're going to have the ball in your hands.
If you catch the godforsaken ball, it'll come your way.
I realize that he's dropped a couple passes, but so has the whole receiving core. Brady needs to target Tate at least 6 to 8 times a game.
He's stealing my nitpick, John.
Was this your nitpick?
Remember when I said
dropping balls? Yeah, dropping balls. Throwing to him on a bubble screen like they do for Welker is not the play I'm looking for him. Let's see some deep slants and post patterns and let him use his speed and space. Well, I would agree with that.
Did I not see a 45-yard post pattern that got connected with?
Yes.
Am I blind?
It did happen. I'd like to see it happen more often, but realistically, you're not going to see that happen more than once or twice a game.
No.
I don't think you're going to see that kind of targeting 6 to 8 times.
And as fast as Tate is, he still doesn't really know how to run a route.
No.
And get open. That's the problem.
He's still learning, but he's still got to be able to adjust to the different defenses that are being thrown at him by opposing secondaries.
You can be as fast as you want, but it doesn't mean anything unless you learn how to get
open.
You've
got to learn how to get open. You've got to learn where to go when someone's playing to cover two, when someone's man, when someone's coming over, with a safety over the top. You got to learn all these different things, and you got to learn how to recognize it. And a lot of that can only be learned by being out there on the field. So, again, I'll excuse him for that. I'm not going to excuse him for the drop balls. You get your hands in the ball, you should catch it. It's that simple. You touch the ball, you should hold on to the ball. That's the rule of thumb. That's what you should go by when you watch the games. The guy can get his hands on the ball, it should be a catch. Hi, guys. My name is Chris from Hertfordshire in the UK. It's pronounced Hertfordshire. Oh, pardon me. Okay, Hertfordshire. Watch Andy's head get even bigger. Okay. Ooh, wow. I've been a listener to the show. Yeah, that's Andy. I've been listening to the show for 5 years now and haven't missed a podcast in that time. You have all provided me with hours of informed analysis and even more hours of laughter. Bill Walshing over. I'm just getting ready to fly over for the Colts game and will be listening to Tuesday's podcast over the Atlantic. Oh, well, then as you're listening to this, I hope you have a safe travel. I really do. That'd be great. Chris, that's awesome.
The Colts suck.
This will be a celebratory visit, as I've been a Pats fan for 25 years this month. Oh, and it's my 40th birthday. Happy birthday, Chris. I'm going to the game with my dad, who doesn't know the first thing about the NFL. Well, it works for Jamie Dukes. I hope to get to visit Gillette prior to game day. What is my best method of getting there, as I am staying in Boston? On game day, I'm getting the Patriots train, but this doesn't operate on non-game days. What can we tell him to take the train here?
It's tough to get down
from
here.
Boston, it's kind of tough to get here.
Yeah, without that commuter rail,
yeah,
the service that drops you off here.
Dude, I'm going to have to tell you, you're just going to have to find a way to rent a car.
Yeah.
Rent a vehicle.
There's all these deals now.
If you can, you know, deal with the driving on the wrong side of the road thing.
That's true.
Because we drive on the right-hand side of the road here, brother. So
you can't take a cab, would be ridiculous.
Yeah, I know.
And that, I don't think you'd get one to run anyway.
No, you know, well, you could take a cab, but I just think it'd be too expensive to come all the way down to Foxborough.
Well, it's like 40 minutes.
Depends on where you are in Boston. You're, yeah, literally 30 minutes to 40 minutes away.
Because there's no T or anything.
Yeah, and that's going to be an expensive trip. So I'd say you'd probably make out better by renting a car for a day.
Yeah, spend $50 or whatever, $40.
Because it's going to be at least that or maybe more for a cab.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So you might as well rent the car and then go.
You have the flexibility to explore.
And yeah, exactly,
you
know? And go wherever you want
to
go. That way you can come to the stadium. You need to go into the Patriots Hall of Fame, presented by Raytheon. You need to go to that, okay? If you're coming here for the game, you got to go to the Hall of Patriot.
Presented by Raytheon.
Thank you. The Hall of Patriot Place.
And, I mean, he can come visit you down in Rhode Island.
Absolutely. You want to come on down? Come on down.
Actually,
brother.
When did he say he was coming? What day was he arriving?
Says he's going to be here. Where are we here? He says he'll be over the Atlantic listening to Tuesday's podcast.
So what's today's?
So I guess
Tuesday.
He's getting ready to leave now.
So if he showed up tomorrow or the next day, he could come even and say hello if he emailed.
He could come
me.
Into the stadium. Yeah, email Kevin.
Yeah.
Send Kevin a note, all right? You can send it to webradio at patriots.com.
Send it to webradio.
That's fine.
And
let Kevin know.
Come
in, you can say hello to us if you want to do that, if you're able to get here.
That'd be cool.
Rent yourself a car. Come visit the Hall of Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon.
Yeah, see the stadium, and you can pop in and say hi for 10
minutes.
Yeah,
what's wrong with that? I think it'll be great. You can do a little pro shop shopping.
There you go.
You can do a little shopping around, Craft World. Patriot Place.
Craft World. That's good. I like that. I haven't heard that.
I just kind of, Disney World, Craft World.
It needs its own little kind of child, whimsical theme music
does,
to go
it
with it, you know?
Yeah, there you go. Where is it? Where is it? There you go. All right. But do that, Chris. I think it'll be fantastic. He says, on game day, I'm getting the Patriots train, but doesn't operate on non-game days. I met you guys at the Sports Cafe last year. Well, Fred and Paul anyway. All right, so they were there when the Patriots were in the UK.
Blah, 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 blah.
Blah, 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 blah. Fred, did you see a fantastic job that night? Paul was a credit to the organization. I hope to maybe see Andy and Eric this time, and also Mr. AK-47, Kevin.
Nice.
So there you go. All right. All right,
I'm
so there you
the
go.
I'm big in the UK now, John. I'm
there you go.
You.
All right, Chris. Perfect. Get your butt down here to Gillette. He says he'd love to buy you guys lunch, too.
There you go.
All right. We're all in, Chris. All right. So hopefully, as you're listening to this over the Atlantic, my man.
Make a note to write us an email.
Yeah. Send us a note when you get here. And tell your dad, he's got to come along for the ride, too, and we'll indoctrinate him in the ways of, American football. Tim in Baltimore. John, my nitpick is Brady's celebration in the end zone after his rushing touchdown. It was not obnoxious enough.
I was about to get upset because I liked it.
I thought that was pretty good.
Fans, I like that even more.
Fans in the end zone started booing him. I loved it, too. I thought it was fun. That was great. He says, after spiking the ball, he should have wiped his butt on the goalpost, spit on the Steelers logo, run to midfield, and sprinkled some of his hair clippings on the 50-yard line.
That might have been like a 45-yard penalty instead of a 15-yard.
He got a yellow flag for each one of those.
Jeez.
Although, I don't know, the butt wiping might have gotten him two penalties.
Fred was great. They were talking about the celebration, and Fred, in defense of Brady, just goes, well, you don't know what the Steelers fans were saying to him. And I'm like, Fred, you sound like a little boy. You sound childish.
I think we probably get the gist of what they were
saying.
He
was calling me Nate, and Perillo goes, yeah, one of them was probably yelling, your mother wears combat boots.
Howard in Connecticut says, first and foremost, what a great win and game. Didn't see it coming. Was just hoping they would go into Pittsburgh and be competitive. To dominate the entire game as they did was just outstanding. All that said, there's a lot of football left. They've won nothing yet at 7-2. Well, that sounds like they could have come right out of Tom Brady's mouth. All right, Howard says, nitpicks could only come up with two. And he says, number one, penalties. Have to clean up the stupid mistakes. Can't afford to give good teams extra opportunities. That one has been approached on this program already today. It's an accurate assessment by you, Howard. Second, prevent D. I think we've got that one covered, too. I understand the concept of taking time off the clock by keeping everything in front of you and letting the opposing team move the ball down the field. However, thereby taking up time off the clock and getting to the end faster. Yes, yes, we understand the philosophy. However, when the D's of the Super Bowl era did this, they would, the majority of the time, come up with a big stop or a turnover the closer the opposing O got to the end zone.
Exactly. That's what I was trying to say.
That's all we're looking for. We're looking for a stop somewhere in the scheme of things, right?
Or even if you take like 5 minutes off the clock, if you're up three scores, whatever.
Well, we did get a pick six.
Yeah, they did.
Sanders got a pick six. And we did not say, Kevin, that if the Patriots were to win this game last week, the defense had to score?
Yeah.
Well, they got it.
We did say that.
We did say that. They got it.
You said that. You're a genius.
Well, no.
I was the one who said they were going to lose by two touchdowns.
Blind squirrel finds a nut, like I said. It was like they had a killer instinct to not only wind time off of the clock, but also to hold the opposing team to no score or, at a minimum, a field goal. I want to see this D develop that killer instinct and not give up the touchdown like they did against Pittsburgh.
Because when they were playing straight up Dijon in their scheme and rushing the passer and doing all that great stuff, they were attacking. They forced Pittsburgh to settle for field goals in the first half and in the third quarter. And then when they played that kind of lazy prevent, Pittsburgh wasn't even really getting into the red zone. They were scoring from outside of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the problem. You're scoring on 33 passes to Wallace, 33-yard passes, excuse me. But that's the problem. We out of batteries?
No, it's just a little slow. That's all.
Terrible.
We'll fix it here. Pardon me, I have to fix the studio clock.
He's winding. That's what he's doing.
No, we got it. We're in good shape.
Look at that. He's radio host, maintenance man. In-stadium PA announcer.
Jack-of-all-trades.
Play-by-play guy.
Master of none. Three big games, Howard says, coming up in a very short time period that will determine what type of team this Patriot team is. It has been a wild, exciting ride so far. Here's hoping they keep it going right into the playoffs, and dare I dream right to Dallas in February. You know, we need to start thinking about that.
It'd be a homecoming for you, kind of, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but you know what? This team has gone to three Super Bowls in the time that I have been here. And I have yet to get to a Super Bowl with the team. Now, a lot of that is because I have, as many of you are aware, my other duties include college basketball during the time. My college football season's over with by then. And so I have some basketball duties at that time, and I really can't afford to miss the basketball games. But I'm wondering, Kevin, this year, if we don't try to make some kind of an arrangement, because that's my home territory. You know, it won't even cost anybody to send me down. I mean, you know, well, I'd like to, you know, get a flight, but I mean, I can stay with my family. It won't cost a hotel.
I'd be, if it actually happened.
We got to talk to Fred.
As I'm knocking on wood, I would hope that, I don't know, I probably would get left behind, but
we got to talk to Fred. I got to do the playbook from Dallas.
I'd fly down there on my own and I'd pay for my own place to stay if I could just get into the game.
That would be awesome.
Because it's the Super Bowl.
I know. That would be awesome. All right, well, we got to start working on Fred about that. Because now it's, you know, I mean, not that it's going to happen or anything, but at least now we can enter into the equation that it could be a possibility.
It's a possibility because they've shown us at times that they are that caliber.
Maybe we need our internet writing campaign to begin.
We could
send the playbook to Dallas.
We could do shows down there the whole week leading up to the Super Bowl.
Well, we have done that. Actually, we took PFW in the three Super Bowls since we've been doing podcasts and live broadcasts here. We have done that from Radio Row.
Then who produced it?
Gary did back here.
Oh, okay. That's cool.
So, actually, Gary would end up going.
Oh.
And so you'd leave somebody back here to run it on this end.
Gotcha.
But PFW guys would
need like a technical guy to set up the
yes,
remote.
You would. You
so
would,
you'd need
right.
in this case Jason or me,
right.
One of us here, which would
right.
probably be me and Jason down there.
Doc is in Seattle on the Ace Ticket Hotline. Doc, welcome into the playbook.
Hey, how are you? I normally listen to you guys on downloading the podcast now.
And great.
I just happen to be free, so I figured I'd give my best to you.
Glad you did.
Job.
Thank you.
Like listening to Kevin. Is Eric there or is
Eric, today's his day off. He'll be back with us tomorrow.
Still his day off.
Yep,
well,
still
anyway,
his day
off.
Some of us don't get days off, Doc.
Yeah, that's what I figured. I hadn't listened to the other part, so I don't know what you talked about, if you started nitpicking or not.
No problem.
So from what I saw in cringing fear, because I must admit, I know everyone was talking about how great the offense was and everything was spectacular and it's the greatest win ever and yay, 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 it's 2001. I tell you, I was nervous until at least the third quarter because I saw a lot of opportunities that they didn't quite get through. And it probably didn't help that I had a Pittsburgh friend who kept telling me that this was like their Super Bowl where Seattle should have been up by two scores by the half.
Yeah.
So what was your thoughts and your nitpick, sir?
Well, my thought on the game was overall, I'm just as surprised as everybody else, pleasantly surprised. My nitpicks have to do with the fact that I thought that the, first of all, the defensive backs still play a little bit too soft. That the defense in the second half overall kind of got away from really what put them in position to win the game, and that's by being aggressive in the first half. I mean, those were my biggest nitpicks. And then there were a couple of minor ones, but the biggest minor one happened to be with the penalties in key situations defensively, like when Jermaine Cunningham lined up in the neutral zone and Brandon Merriweather's pass interference. I mean, you just have to have a better presence of mind of where you are on the field and what the situation is on the field. You've just got to know better. These guys are not football novices. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. I think one nice non-nitpick was, I forget exactly which one it was, but there was a penalty. And normally that would kill their offensive drive, and Brady was able to convert.
Yeah.
And normally this year, if they've got it going and there's a penalty, they're, you know, now it's second and 15, and that's it. The drive's going to die. So I was at least happy to see that. I was happy, you know, from what I could see, that the defenders were on the receivers a little closer. They weren't, like, you know, 20 yards off, keeping all this distance that people have been complaining about.
Mm-hmm.
To be right there.
The only reason that was the case was because there was so much pressure on Roethlisberger.
Yeah, there was a lot of...
And the defenders, the defensive backs didn't have to cover as long. Right. That's what happened.
This is true.
That's good. Well, you know, there's another positive. We, you know, there was that magical pressure that we've always been looking
pressure
for.
Pressure bust pipes.
I got to tell you, I was stunned as anybody after seeing what happened in Cleveland and then what happened in Pittsburgh. And, like, you know, it was an emotion. I don't know. One of the defensive people, I don't know if it was Will Fork or Merriweather on EEI, was kind of said that they did play back, or they were kind of ordered the coach's decision to play more prevent in the fourth quarter. I don't know if that's an excuse, but I have to agree with you. I mean, I didn't think we would lose the game in the fourth quarter, but I don't like giving up, you know, that many scores in the fourth quarter, particularly when you're coming up into Indy, and we all know how well that's been going.
Are we just being let me ask you something though, Doc. Are we just being greedy as fans here?
Yes.
Or should we appreciate the fact that the team has a definitive way of going about this, and that's what they're going to do? They're going to take the pedal. They're going to take their foot off the pedal when they have a lead like that. I mean, we want them to go for the jugular, and sometimes the jugular may not be the most prudent way to go.
Yeah, well, you know, and if they did that and then we injured somebody like Will Fork or somebody like that, there is greed. I mean, you've heard Pink Hats, I'm sure, and I remember a few years ago somebody called in to PFW saying, I've been a Pats fan since 2000. They're like, yeah, good timing. You know, as I joked, I grew up when, you know, our mascot was a guy crapping a football, you know, where, you know, they played the L.A. Faders for the Super Bowl. Yeah. You know, the idea of them winning the Super Bowl. And in fact, I thought that, you know, that this was my life. They were going to go play the greatest show on turf and lose that one after losing the Favre and the Bears.
Sure, sure.
Each time, you know. So I think we have gotten greedy. We expect to be in, you know, the playoffs and all of that. And I don't know that, you know, you get any of these true fan arguments, but I think there's a lot of that popularity. And, you know, it's the same with the Red Sox. And it's just, you know, there's a lot of popularity going on, and now they want to see that finishing. Getting back to that actual strategy, yeah, I'd like to see them, particularly after what happened to them in Cleveland. Sure, you'd like to see them blow everyone away. But as you realize from that year we all talk about, I don't think their defense was good that year, and they gave up a lot of points. And they talked about bending, not breaking, and then finally it came back and bit them. And, you know, they were lucky, in my opinion, that Phil Rivers was injured and, you know, LT was meow meow.
Yeah.
Or they may have lost that AFC Championship game. Thank you. You know? And we don't like to admit that, you know? It's kind of like all my, you know, the Red Sox fans would say, oh, not for Aaron Boone. It's like, you think you were going to beat the Marlins and Josh Beckett magically? You know, so, you know, so I think we're getting great. So now here's the big thing.
All right.
What happens if they don't win against Indy? Because I guess everyone would predict loss against, well, destroy them in Cleveland, didn't happen. Lose in Pittsburgh, hopefully it'll be at least close and respectable.
Didn't happen.
They'll probably win. What if they went down? If they lose to Indy, does everybody jump off the bandwagon again?
Well, I don't think that we have. I don't think we would have everybody jump up the bandwagon, but you know, I'm sure we would have some people fall off simply because of the way that the roller coaster ride has gone up the hill and down the hill at such a steep angle. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Maybe some people that emotionally just can't take it, and so they're like, "Hey, you know, wake me when it's the playoffs."
Yeah, I mean, I think you put it well. I mean, the Cleveland one was like the. I fortunately was at work last year during the first playoff game. And I figure, oh, it's no problem. You know, I can miss this playoff game. Well, it's probably a good thing I did miss it. But I have a feeling for those who watched the horror unfold, it was pretty much the same sort of thing. A little credit to, you know, our guy who probably helped lose the game against Cleveland by making a rookie mistake,
mm-hmm.
which we all would make, comes and has a phenomenal game, game of the year for him. Bounces right back and gets the credit to that, you know. I think that you got to give at least look positive that the Patriots were able to put behind them. Well, it was, you know, there was nothing good you could say about the Cleveland loss.
No, really not. Other than the fact, I will say this, other than the fact that I thought the Cleveland loss helped this team focus more clearly on Pittsburgh.
Yeah, that's the, as my mother always said, that's the other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how was the play?
Exactly. It's a shame we had to have that happen, yeah. But at least it did serve a purpose. And you've heard this cliche before, but at least you didn't let Cleveland beat you twice.
Yes. And furthermore, you know, better to lose, you know, you get any argument, is it good to lose one rather than go undefeated and all that garbage? I'd have to agree with Belichick, coach of New England Patriots, that there's no such thing as a good loss,
mm-hmm.
but there are worse losses. I mean, it would have been devastating to, say, lose twice to the Jets or twice to Miami, a division, or drop this stinker in Buffalo.
Sure, absolutely. I agree with you, Doc.
Anyway, give my best to Pete Shepherd if he comes back, because I'll probably be too busy working to call him back and give my best to him.
He will be here, and I will tell him.
Thank you, and enjoy listening to the podcast.
Doc, thank you very, very much for taking the time. Appreciate it. All right, so Doc's in Seattle, taking the time out of his day. Sounded like he was out cruising, so he must have us on an app or something on his iPhone, I guess. I don't know. That's what it sounded like anyway, didn't it?
Either that or he was on some sort of airplane, which I don't think is possible.
Well, you never know. These days, you just never know. I got a couple of other superlatives I wanted to pass along here before I forget them, since we've, you know, still been harping on the nitpicks. Pittsburgh, as we talked about, entered the game first in the NFL in rushing allowed. A lot of teams only an average of 58.3 yards per game. That's 2.6 yards per carry, right? Patriots got 103 officially for a 4.3 average. And again, as we mentioned earlier, the first team to have 100 yards rushing against the Pittsburgh defense. James Sanders, his fourth quarter pick six for 32 yards, second time in his career. He's returned an interception for a touchdown. He had a 39-yarder that he had as a rookie against Buffalo 5 years ago in 05. Patriots have returned three picks for scores in 2010. It's the 12th time in team history that the team has had three or more interceptions returned for a touchdown in a single season. They've done it, they've returned three touchdowns or three picks for a score nine times, four in 97, five in 03 and 01. So they're ranking up there really with some of the better defensive performances in terms of forcing turnovers and getting six the other way. Nothing wrong with that. All right. Alejandro, for Olo John, first of all, let me be the first to wish you and your family a happy Thanksgiving. Thank you, Alejandro. Same to you. You were talking last week about why we hate the Steelers. I guess it's because their fans have a certain swagger to them that makes them obnoxious. That said, I was delighted when Tom Brady spiked that ball with all his might as to say, shove it up your beep, beep. Anytime you're on the road and the stadium is half empty in the third quarter, you had a good game. But I have two nitpicks. All right, number one, drive-killing penalties. Halftime margin could have been much higher. You know what? I think that probably ranks as number one, is the number one nitpick. The penalties that seem to happen at inopportune moments. Again, we're really reaching here, but you know what? That has been mentioned by more people today and by people that I've talked to about the game over the last 2 days than anything else, is the drive-killing penalties. Number two, the missed extra point and the subsequent missed two-point conversion. It didn't really come back to haunt us because of the pick six later in the game, but those things can really be dangerous in a playoff game, possibly even on the road where points are at a premium. Now, let me address that for just a second, Alejandro, because, you know, you brought up a good point that I hadn't really thought of much, but we'll think of it here. First of all, the extra point, again, we mentioned earlier, we're gonna give Shane Graham a pass, again, because it's the first game. And you're working still with a new, you know, special teams unit. You know, long snapper, holder, kicker, everything's new. Well, this is Mesko's first season, and it's the first time either the snapper or the kicker have worked with Mesko. So you're going to allow for a little bit of a grace period there. This being said, the two-point conversion is a nitpick that I hadn't thought of, and it really should be a nitpick. Why are we chasing points when you got the lead in the game? You make the other team chase you in points. When they lined up to go for the two-point conversion, my first thought was, why are they doing this? You always make, in football, you always make the other team chase you and chase the points. You don't go chase the points. Because if you miss the two-point conversion, even if it does put you up, I think it would have put the Patriots up by a perfect 14. Two perfect scores, right? It doesn't make any sense to do that. Go up by 13. They still got to get two touchdowns. You're chasing a ghost point there. You don't need it. The other team still has to score twice to take the lead. And when you miss it, well, now you kind of put yourself in a bit of a hole. Yeah, it's only a 12-point swing. They still got to score twice, but it just didn't make much sense. Why do it? Kick the point and get out of there. That just sort of flew in the face of everything standard that coaches are taught and they teach, generally speaking. You never chase points. You always make the other team chase points whenever you have the opportunity. And the Patriots, I thought, just they had that one screwed up. They should not have gone for two in that instance. Alejandro says, my question to you is, if we lose the division title to the Jets, can this Patriot team win three playoff games on the road? Yes, I think they can. Obviously, it'd be very difficult, but I think, you know, they've won, you know, in a couple of relatively difficult places for them to win. They've won in Miami and they've won in Pittsburgh this year. So, I mean, there's every bit the possibility now that, you know, if they have to play three games on the road, you're going to get a Pittsburgh again somewhere. We've seen them play in the Dome, you know, play Indy again. So, you know, they've won in San Diego. If San Diego ends up, you know, somehow, you know, eking out ahead in the AFC West. So you've won basically everywhere that you would have to go. Question is, yeah, sure. Can they do it? And I would have to say, yes, they can. Will it be harder? Sure. Would you rather have them at home? Absolutely. But can they win them? Yeah. Says, keep it up, John. You know, Rook Nation is listening. That's the first time I've heard that. I didn't know I had a nation.
You do. You have an entire country now.
Dang.
Devoted followers.
Do I get a raise now?
Are you going to get like membership cards, like Red Sox Nation? So
I would
have Rook Nation membership cards.
I'd be happy to do that.
Get discounts if somebody Patriot
really
Place?
If somebody really wants. Well, now I'd have to get a little clearance for that one, but marketing bigwigs.
We'll just copy your work idea here.
Yeah.
We'll just hand it out as Rook Nation fan club cards.
Sounds good. We can do that. Why anybody would want that is beyond me, but yeah, we could do that.
I'll sign up.
All right, David. This is David. Hey, Rook and Kevin. Love it. Why didn't BB try keeping the defensive throttle to the floor all the way to finish the game out with the Steelers for practice? Yeah, that's sort of been the question of the day, David. We're kind of curious.
Kidding me?
We're kind of curious as to why he didn't do that either. Says, because you know, next week, even if the Patriots are up by 21 going into the fourth, Manning can bring his team back and still win the game. So why not get your players a little in tune with what they're going to have to do next week and really see what your defense is made of? Because I don't know if the defense is necessarily good enough to put their foot down on an opposing team's offense, not allowing them back in the game. What are your thoughts? Even with all the Colts' injuries, Manning alone can and will that team, or he said can, will that team to win. Well, you're absolutely right about that, Dave. Yeah, he can more than, you know, there's only one other quarterback in the league that can come close to what Peyton Manning does, and I think we have him here in New England. when it comes to putting a team on your shoulders and willing a team to win. There's two guys in the NFL that can do that, Brady and Manning, and not necessarily in that order, and I think we all know that. You know, Colts fans realize they're lucky that they have a guy like Peyton Manning. Patriots fans are lucky that they realize they have a guy like Tom Brady. You do have to – that's the next step, okay? We saw this team – we've seen this defensive team, and it brings up an interesting point here, David. We've seen this defensive unit for the Patriots in increments improve. We've seen them tighten against the run. We've seen them tighten slightly against the pass, but still not to my liking. And again, I guess they're still allowing for the relative inexperience back there. But, hey, after you played 9 games, when do you become experienced? Played 9 games now. You're not a rookie anymore. Let's go. You're into your sophomore season by now, dude. Let's kind of get with the program.
I'm on board with that.
Okay. It's kind of like the whole, you know, freshman year of college. Well, if you've played, you know, 89 or 95% of the plays and you've played, you know, 9 games deep into the season, are you really a freshman anymore? No, you're not. So
time
I would
to
argue.
Take the training wheels
yes,
off.
Yes, thank you. It is time to take the training wheels off and let these guys see what they can do. This is the next logical step that this defense can take. Number one, unleash the hounds defensively on the corners. And number two, learning how to put your foot down on the jugular of the opposing team, defensively speaking, of course. They haven't done that yet. We saw signs this past Sunday night against Pittsburgh that they are capable of doing that in attack mode defensively. Linebackers shooting the gaps, making the plays, stuffing Mendon Hollis in particular. But, you know, now let's see them take the next step. Let's see them really learn how to step on the other team's throat. When you got them down by 14 to 21 points, as David put it, when you got them down, what's it going to take to kick these guys to the curb and say, game over? That's what I want to see. That's the next step that this Patriots defense needs to take. It's a good point, David. Very good point. John. He says, hi, John. No other words. I was blown away by the performance. Couldn't be happier with the way they played and kept the fans quiet and out of the game. One of the things I was impressed with, although it wasn't technically game-related, was the way that Logan Mankins and Matt Light fired back hard at anyone who put their hands on Brady. It was great to see that look of a team who has each other's backs. You know, that's a good point. I think we saw that on the cheap shot. It was Lamar Woodley that put the cheap shot, shoved Brady to the ground after the pass and got a penalty. And then we saw, I think it was Matt Light that came in after him and shoved him back, kind of like, hey, don't hit my boy. I think it was Matt. Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. That's good. But I think, you know, you're going to see anybody do that. It's just it was nice to see, and the cameras caught it at a good moment. And it was, I think that was probably a frustration move out of Woodley than anything else you saw. I mean, they hadn't been able to get to the guy all night. He finally had a shot to, you know, rough him up a little bit. He took a shot. He got flagged for it. And obviously Matt Leick took exception. On to the nitpicks, he says, I know about junk time, and I understand brewing the clock down, but at the same time, it really looked like the prevent D let their foot off the gas and that let the Steelers look good, and they had no right to. Another was Ben Jarvis Green Ellis. Now, I do like how this kid runs and hits the hole. He's no Maroney. However, can someone tell him that it's okay to actually try and avoid a hit? He runs straight at the D, doesn't look for an option to go around them. With his running talent, he could gain real yards if he looked at other options. And this one, just for fun, Chris Collinsworth hates the Pats as much as I hate the Mannings. Difference is, I'm not an announcer with a need to be impartial. In this game, the following happened. The Pats scored 39 on Pittsburgh. Brady rushed a touchdown. Pats D sacked Roethlisberger 5 times. Pats took away the running game. Pats secondary looked very good. And then they didn't convert on a 3rd and 23. 23! And what does Collinsworth say? Well, that's what happens when you don't have Randy Moss. Made me throw things at my television. I don't think I remember that. Do you remember that moment? Did he say that?
I don't know. No, I don't. It doesn't stand out to me.
I'd have to tell you that if he said that, I'm willing to cut him some slack because I thought Collinsworth was actually pretty fair to the Patriots. I think he did an okay job, not only in first of all, he's a vastly underrated analyst. He's right on the money with a lot of stuff. And number two, I think he was actually pretty good to the Patriots, to be honest with you. I don't really have any complaints with his with his criticisms. What do you think, Pete Shepard?
I have mixed emotions when it comes to him, but I thought he did overall did a good. I believe he did say that. I was watching the game again. He did say that, which I didn't hear it. And I remember I was also upset when he said it.
You did?
Yeah,
okay.
Ridiculous. But I think he is vastly. I used to hate him when he was doing the show on HBO that's now Showtime NFL.
You're right. He was very smarmy when he was doing that show. Almost like he was up on a pedestal and nobody else could touch him.
I'm like, who the hell are you? I mean, you went to one Super Bowl and lost.
But he's changed.
No, he has changed.
It's because he's matured.
He has changed.
And because he's in a position now that really the position John Madden was in. He is an authority, and he's in an authoritative position, and he's handling it better than I expected he would.
I think the outrage, and I posted this on Facebook the other day because, I mean, it was absolutely pathetic to listen to the Three Stooges, Sharp, Marino, and Cowher before the Patriots.
Yeah.
I mean, everything they said, absolutely everything they said was wrong, wrong, and wrong. And it is amazing to me how some of these high-profile coaches and ex-players, and I've said this for years on the radio, I'm going to keep saying it here time and time again, they take a game like what happened to the Patriots against Cleveland, and somehow that is their entire season. It is so stupid and idiotic, and if you've seen how all these games have gone this year, where not just the Patriots, in the NFL in general, there's not a trend on a week-to-week basis here, okay? You can't just say because they stuck up the joint against Cleveland that that was going to be the trend for the rest of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Then they should know better. I mean, it's exhausting to listen to when in these pregame shows. You're waiting for some hard-hitting analysis, and it's personal bias. And of course, Cowher's going to pick the Steelers against the Patriots.
I don't watch the NFL on CBS. I don't watch their pregame show.
I watch ESPN from 11 to 12, and I usually watch that one. I mean, I watch Patriots Game Day on Channel 4 with Steve Burton and Biasi and Zoe.
Yeah,
I watch that. I kind of flip back.
I don't watch NFL. I don't watch CBS.
I should probably watch the Fox one more.
Maybe I should too. But frankly, I don't even watch that one.
Yeah, I know. I hear you. I kind of block it out.
I do exactly what you do. I watch from 11 to 12 on ESPN, and then usually from 12 to 1, I'm doing errands so I can get done in time for the kickoff.
Well,
but when I'm watching, I probably have the ESPN one on, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I mean, I have that one on a lot. I seem to be watching more and more of that because it's just the personal biases. Not that ESPN doesn't have them either.
Well,
in some cases,
I like Chris Mortensen. I definitely like
Ditka.
No, well, yeah, I like Ditka. Ditka sausage. Ditka. Adam.
Adam Schefter. Oh, yeah. Well, he's terrific.
Yeah,
he's terrific.
He's fantastic.
He and Vic Carucci are my two favorite people.
Yeah, they're very good. Very good. Thank you. So, I mean, because of those two guys, that's why I watch ESPN.
But just in the shit and shot. But the Patriots can't rush. They can't rush the quarterback. Are you kidding me? He watched like one half of football. Okay, what about
that's
the other
a great
team?
Impression right
that's
there.
What he does. Yeah. It's unbelievable.
I know.
I mean, you can't understand anything he says anyway. And what usually comes out of his mouth is blathering. Pedantic babble about nothing.
And some drool.
We brought in a new one. Pedantic. I like it. Excellent.
So, what Shannon Sharpe says basically about anything. And how about when he came back from – they come back from break on CBS.
Yeah.
And he's rapping to that Eminem song. It was Eminem. Some Eminem song that was – I know the rap guy. I don't know what it was. But he's like, gyrating and clowning around and doing all this stuff. And I'm just like, just shut up. You are not that important to this broadcast. That's how I felt anyway.
I like it. What do you got coming up?
Well, we're going to recap a little bit on the Steelers. And, it'll be a lot. And look forward to the Indianapolis Colts game, which I think is going to be another fantastic game. Paul Kaharsky, who covers the AFC South from ESPN.com, will join me on the program here at 4:30.
Great.
And, of course, lots of emails, Facebook's up, lots of phone calls, hopefully. And
perfect.
Lots of opinions. That's what I'm looking for because it was such a tremendous game on Saturday night. And I just maybe I'm alone again on the island, John, but I can't say I'm surprised. I kept telling people all week long this team is 22-2. They don't lose back-to-back games very often. You're going to see Brady come out firing, ticked off, the entire team.
He was ticked off.
You knew they were going to come out swinging. I didn't think it was going to be that big of a blowout, but I mean, the score doesn't indicate they won that game as far as I'm concerned by 20 points. And that was just tons of garbage time at the end, but you have to be impressed. Meanwhile,
definitely.
I was away last week because I had some issues to deal with, some family stuff and some errands to deal with, but I did not get to. I wondered why you weren't here. And then I realized, and then I realized after Baylor had beaten your beloved Longhorns, as I told you they
I told
you they were going to.
Yes, you did.
And
had nothing to do with that. Had nothing to do with that.
What has happened?
I don't know. I don't know. I saw on, I watched College Game Day on Saturday, and Tom Rinaldi, who I'm respecting now as an interviewer, he's really good at it. But I saw him grill Mac Brown. And Mac even alluded to, you know, hey, I'm answering the tough questions that you're asking me. And he really wasn't asking him anything that we're not asking ourselves as fans. It is a complete and total breakdown of all systems on the University of Texas
campus. They have become the Dallas Cowboys.
They have.
It's unbelievable. Really have. You know, I mean,
there will have to be.
Stop saying about kids, you know. You're talking about 18 and 19, 20-year-olds.
There will have to be change in his staff. And if there isn't change in his staff, then you know, Mac probably ought to think about retiring.
One other quick note is, too, is coming up on the NFL Network, I don't know if you saw this, on November 19th at 8 p.m., Bill Parcells, Reflection of a Life in Football, 90-minute documentary.
Ooh, I hadn't seen that.
Which is going to be fascinating. It was in the PFW this week. I was just reading about it. It came out today. We get it here first. I think it goes on to the stands tomorrow.
Correct.
So, I mean, and there's stuff about him being they let NFL films inside his house, inside practices. You know, some footage that you've never seen before that they have allowed. Meetings, you know, even off-the-field stuff. So I'm looking forward. Bill Belichick is interviewing it, as is Bob Kraft, just to name a couple. Phil Simms, obviously. So that's going to be fascinating.
That will be.
19th, yeah. Right, 90 minutes.
19th. Yep. Mark it down on your calendar. Yep. All right, Pete Shepard Show's coming up here just a couple of moments. A couple of the quick emails here I wanted to share. Mike says, John, now that the Steelers have released Jeff Reed, do you think he's a better option than Graham? No. Next question. Quayo from Aggieland. But our kicker had just missed a PAT. What could we have done? I was the right ball to go for the two. Oh, he says the right call to go for the two. Kicker was shaky all game with his kicks. Everything was going right. Nope. You never chase points. You always make the other team chase the points, Quayo. Well, what do you know? You're an Aggie. Then let's see.
Ouch.
Here. Oh, well.
They're over 500, aren't they?
Yeah, they're actually... They are. Actually, they're ranked this week, too. So, I don't expect the Texans to beat them. I really don't.
I think the Aggies are 19th. They're playing Nebraska this weekend on Saturday night.
Yeah, they might be. They might be. Greg. He says, what's up, Rook? I knew the Pats would win. Just didn't think it would be in such impressive fashion. My only thing that I can say that I wasn't too happy about was the Steelers' fourth quarter scoring. Did the Pats let them score because I know it was garbage time, or was that the Steelers actually figuring out the defense? But I'm really happy about the win, and now all the haters from last week can stop the crying and stop the three-game losing streak talk. Go Pats, and thanks for the show. No, you know, I don't think it was so much the Steelers figuring it out. What I'll tell you is I think it's the Patriots' defense just not keeping, you know, their foot on the gas pedal. And, again, that's something that we talked about, and they probably are going to have to work on. It's just that simple. That's something that a young defense needs to – that's the next step to take.
Similar to the Cincinnati game.
Sure.
You know, which is opening game. You know, they're up by four touchdowns on that one.
Sure.
It's, you know what, if you look at every team, they all do it. That's why you don't go by net yardage,
right,
except for fantasy football. The rest of it is meaningless.
Nothing. Meaningless. Dagmar from Miami gets the last word. He says, John, I'm so glad we were all wrong about the game. Nice job by Gronk coming back from a terrible game against the Browns. I love to see Brady getting in the face of his linemen. That's the Brady I want to see, screaming at his boys, pulling for perfection, not the Brady that sometimes walks head down toward the sideline after an empty-handed drive. Anyways, keep up the good work. Best regards from Miami to you and to Kevin. Dagmar, I'm going to be down in your end of the neighborhood this weekend, brother. So you got any good suggestions for places to go? I'll be covering the Virginia Tech-Miami game this next Saturday.
Oh, are you?
Yes. Doing that one.
You're broadcasting?
Yes.
Oh.
The ISP radio network. So be doing that, which is carried on Sirius XM as well. So I'll be there for the,
are you doing,
the ACC game of the week.
Are you doing UConn football? Is that? It was you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I thought it was you.
What, did you hear it on the radio?
I don't know where I heard it. I just heard you. Right? I said, you're everywhere.
Do you listen to XM or Sirius? Or?
Occasionally, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's probably where you heard it then.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it was the UConn game against Rutgers a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, that was a good game.
Yeah. Yeah. Was it Rutgers? Was it Rutgers? No.
Louisville?
It was UConn against West Virginia.
West Virginia.
When they beat West Virginia for the very first time ever.
Yeah.
First time they've ever beaten.
It was overtime, right?
Yes, it was.
Yeah, it was a great game.
Yeah, it was a very good game.
Friday night game, right?
Yeah, it was a Friday night. That was the one. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was there.
Yep.
All right, Pete Shepard Show is coming up next. Same Pat's time, same Pat's channel manana, kids.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
We're pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome on the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the Playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the Playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2 on American Airlines Patriots.com. Radio.